It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night. It is Friday. It is 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. You can always catch us on the 101.3 ESPN app, which is that free download in the Google Play Store or in the Apple Store. It's got access to everything that we do. Sure, news and notes, scores, things like that, but also exclusive web content, full access to all of our full show podcasts from both The Huddle and Champlain Valley Game Night, all the things you could want in that 101.3 ESPN app. We're also on your Amazon Echo device. So if you're using the Amazon Echo, just simply say enable 101.3 ESPN. And then once you've done that one time, it's open 101.3 ESPN. We go up until 6:25 today. Short show as we get you Red Sox baseball, Sox and Sox. The pale hose, the White Sox in town to Fenway to take on the Red Sox. White Sox, one of the worst teams in baseball. My dad's favorite team. He'll be miserable at this series. White Sox fans will be all be miserable most of the season. But Red Sox fans, hopefully, will have a good weekend. Chris Sale's on the mound today, too. We'll get to those Red Sox lineups about 15 minutes from now. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. You can do so on the Town Fair Tire text line or the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Today was a weird day. I had the huddle in conjunction with Rich and Arnie. We had the huddle planned almost completely by 1 o'clock. And usually, you know, we're putting the finishing touches on the show at like 3:15. Like we've got everything. We're figuring out what audio we want to use. So usually it's about 3:15 that we finish the show planning completely, and we spend the last 45 minutes doing further research, seeing if anything else has come out. Well, today we had the show nearly done by 1 o'clock, and we were pumped because like, wow, we got the show done early finally, and we got some more time. I had some other things to work on. So in addition to planning the show, researching for the show, I had some things to do with intern Nick, who's in here on his first week. And then all of a sudden, I start seeing it. 1 o'clock. Twitter is crazy. And Patriot beat writers are saying, big news. Biggest move Belichick's ever made is coming today. And I text a buddy of mine who's in the business. And I say, hey, what are you hearing about the Patriots? And he goes, I'm hearing Gronk's going to be traded today. He goes, I got two people who've confirmed it to me, but I don't have a third yet, so I'm not going to run with it. But he goes, I've got the article. It's in the drafts of our website, ready to put up. And I'm like, wow, okay. I text another guy in the business who I trust. I say, well, hey, what are you hearing about Gronk? And he says, it's crazy. What are you hearing about Gronk? And I said, well, I heard he's going to be traded. And then the conversation kind of stalled for a little bit. So I'm hearing Gronk's going to be traded. I'm not getting it totally confirmed. I'm not getting my three sources on it. And then 45 minutes later, more and more people are starting to come out. Hey, Gronk was alienated last year. That's what Belichick does before he moves in. It's starting to really feel like there's momentum going towards a Gronk trade. And then out of nowhere, Tom E. Curran of NBC Sports Boston comes out and says, not going to be moved. Zero truth to it. Look, I don't know what to believe about Gronk and Belichick's relationship. I do know this, though. Things are odd in New England right now. Things are different in New England right now. For 20 years, the Patriots have been the model of consistency. They've been the model of success, and they have been the blueprint for teams looking to have success. And teams have tried to replicate what the Patriots have done. That's why you've seen Belichick disciples. That's why you have seen Belichick assistants get head coaching jobs, because they all want a piece of what has happened in New England. You even heard the other day, LeBron said about the Warriors. He said, the Warriors don't beat themselves. They're like the Patriots. I mean, they have been the gold standard. And there's something happening right now. And it's just different. And it's just weird. And I can't put my finger on it, because I do think the Patriots are going to be good this season. I don't think that any of the things that we have heard this offseason are going to undo the organization. Look at the schedule they play. It's not overly difficult. They play the AFC South. Yeah, we think Jacksonville is okay. I think Jacksonville is going to regress. I don't think they're a 13-win team this year. I think they're closer to an 8-win team. Tennessee was a playoff team last year, but do we really buy into them? Houston, they're going to be okay, I think. Deshaun Watson, Andrew Luck, we don't know what to make of him in Indy. The AFC South they play, not overly strong. Their own division, not overly strong. At the very least, they're going to win their division. So I have no problem saying the Patriots are going to be in the playoffs. No amount of Tom Brady, Bill Belichick drama, Bill Belichick, Rob Gronkowski drama, Bill Belichick, Alex Guerrero drama, Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft drama, none of that's going to undo the Patriots season. But it just feels odd that for a franchise that for so long has been the gold standard, that we've had so much come out over the last 6 months. I mean, it was right after, it was going into the first week of the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken, where Seth Wickersham of ESPN writes the article that Brady and Belichick are at odds. They're in a power struggle. And that had never happened before. And that was odd. And then you get the on-field stuff in the Super Bowl and Malcolm Butler and no answers coming out. And people questioning, for the first time, Bill Belichick's genius. That was odd. And then you get them trading Brandon Cooks. And then you get them trading back in the draft multiple times when we think they need to win this year. And all that, it seems odd, but it was always, in Belichick we trust, in Bill we trust, kiss the rings. And then we've heard, you know, Giselle saying Tom versus Time that Brady doesn't feel appreciated. We've heard that Gronk is unhappy. We've had both of them skipping out on OTAs. In Brady's case, skipping the entire offseason program, which he's never done in his entire career. That's odd. And then we get Julian Edelman suspended for steroids. And then we get rumors that Gronk's going to be traded. And then I read this on Twitter too today from a guy who's got a blue check mark, so somebody who knows what they're talking about in terms of media. I read right before I got on the air here that Belichick reportedly wanted to trade Tom Brady, but Robert Kraft held a meeting with him and nixed it because Tom Brady said he would retire if that happened. I don't know that that's true. I suspect by the time I'm off the air in 20 minutes, I will have either seen a confirmation of that or a denial of that assertion. But those kind of things coming out, they don't happen to the Patriots. The Patriots is the organization where things don't get leaked. The Patriots are the organization where everything stays internal. We get former players saying how miserable it is. We get players that never played for New England questioning what it's like to play there and saying how awful it is. It's atypical. It's different. Again, I don't know that it matters because I don't know that it's going to disrupt their season. In fact, I think they still make the playoffs. But it's just different. It is just different. And it feels odd as we start to think about heading towards training camp. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. You know, speaking of the other franchise in the NFL that we cover, the New York Giants are quietly having a good offseason program. And I'm liking a lot of what I've heard, whether it was from Dave Gettleman early in the offseason program, and we do wish him our best as he's now battling lymphoma, whether it was a lot of what we saw from Odell Beckham Jr. early, even Eric Flowers, somebody I've been hard on, showing up, Nate Solder and his work ethic, especially with a guy like Eric Flowers. Eli Apple's made a lot of strides. I like maybe nothing more than what I heard this week from Pat Shurmur. New Giants head coach was asked by The Athletic, by Gary Myers. He said, you know, basically, what did you learn from your first head coaching job in Cleveland? Now, they won 9 games in Cleveland under Pat Shurmur in 2 seasons. That's 4.5 a year. That's not a lot. But when you're coming off 2 years where you've won 1 game total, 4.5 wins a year should get you a statue in Cleveland. And Pat Shurmur said, basically, what I learned is this. He says, when I went in the first time, I got more wrapped up with the scheme and X's and O's. At least this time, I've spent way more time with the coaches and way more time with the players, getting to know them better so that when we have things that we've got to overcome, we know each other better. I may like nothing that I have heard out of Giants mandatory minicamp, which is coming next week, in the lead up to minicamp, or in the OTA program this offseason, than that. I may not like nothing more than that because I was listening to Rick Bucher today. He was on Colin Cowherd's show on 960 The Zone. And they were talking about NBA coaches not getting enough credit. And Rick Bucher said that Steve Kerr deserved a lot of credit because, look, some people know the scheme and the basketball. Other people know how to manage people and manage egos. And the really great ones can do both. And he was making his case that Steve Kerr was a really great coach. That's what I liked hearing there from Pat Shurmur, because it's one thing to go in and understand what personnel to run on fourth and short offensively. It's one thing to know where to position your wide receivers and when to put a guy in motion. That's super important. We know that. In fact, a lot of football is over the regular fan's head. If we went out of the street and said, what's a cover three to a lot of people, most people couldn't tell you. So schematics in football is very important. But also, it's the relationships. And this is what we've heard in the changing of the guard and the way we view managers and head coaches. I mean, look at Joe Girardi, look at John Farrell. Two stodgy baseball guys in their 40s, 50s. In Girardi's case, I think probably about 50. That were just wired to be different. You know, they were cut out of the 70s cloth of manager. Not really personable, not good with the players necessarily, wore on the players, had a super intensity to them. They get replaced by a couple guys in Aaron Boone and Alex Cora, who still undoubtedly know the X's and O's because they played the game at the highest level for a long time, more than a decade in each of their cases, if I'm not mistaken. Won a couple World Series. Went to a couple World Series between the two of them. But they also relate to the common player, the average player, the everyday player. They speak the same language as them. They understand and remember, because they just got out, how hard the game is. And they build those relationships with the players as people. And it's a lot easier to play hard for somebody who you respect and who you trust and who you get to know. And that's what I like about Pat Shurmur, is the ability to, you've heard me say it on this show a bunch, I like the idea of people that can assess themselves and can do it honestly. Understand what they're good at. Understand what they're bad at. And Pat Shurmur knew when he went to Cleveland the first time, probably we've all been in this situation. You go and get a job and you got to be a tryhard, right? You put your head down. You work your tail off. You don't cause any noise. You don't go out for a beer on, you know, you don't cut out at work at 4:40 when everybody else wants to go out for a happy hour beer. You're staying not only till 5, but till 5:10 to prove that you can do the job. Pat Shurmur is in his office, I'm sure, in Cleveland, designing every play, watching tape over and over again, trying to prove, look, I'm earned this and I'm capable. This time around, he's recognized that that is important. But it's also important to get to know people and to understand what they're going through and to make that connection with Odell Beckham Jr. and to make the connection with Eli Apple so that you can start over with him. And to go and connect with Landon Collins so that when he is a free agent, that maybe he remembers the personal relationship that you developed, and maybe he will want to resign there. All of that helps, and if you don't think it helps, just know it certainly doesn't hurt. And I like seeing that change in Pat Shurmur. I like a lot of what I've heard out of the Giants. I love listening to Saquon Barkley talk. I love listening to Dave Gettleman talk a lot about what the team needs. I like a lot of what I've seen out of guys like Nate Solder and Eric Flowers and Apple. But I like nothing more than what I heard out of Pat Shurmur, who says he's focused more this time around on developing relationships with players and with his coaching staff. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. Give those Red Sox lineups about 3.5 minutes from now. I talk about Alex Cora, and I do like Alex Cora, and I like him for a lot of the reasons we just talked about and what he used the example in relating him to Pat Shurmur. I like him a lot because of he does what Shurmur does, or what Shurmur says he's trying to do. I did not like what Alex Cora did yesterday with his lineup. Jalen Beeks is making his first start, and behind him, he ran out the quintessential AAA lineup. And for a guy who's in his first start and needs all the support he can get, you better give him the best lineup and the best defensive, you know, best choreographed defense for success. But what did Alex Cora do yesterday? With a AAA call-up pitcher, he ran out, okay? A catcher who hadn't started a game all year in Blake Swihart. In left field, he put a AAA first baseman in Sam Travis. In center field, you put your normal left fielder. In right field, you put your normal DH in JD Martinez. So you gave the guy, you also, oh, by the way, give him a designated hitter that was a catcher batting 203. So you gave the guy, you gave a little used, a major league debut pitcher, a guy who's making his first start at catcher, That's not a great recipe. So when he gives up five runs in the first inning, I bet you I'll say this. That has a less likely chance of happening if Christian Vasquez or Sandy Leon is the catcher. Blake Swihart hasn't called a game all season. You put him out there, he throws a ton of fastballs, he gets hammered around the ballpark, gives up five runs in the first. That's not great managing right there by Alex Cora. I defended a lot of what he's done this year. That one I didn't get. Blake Swihart catching a major league debut pitcher doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That's not giving the guy a great recipe for success, a great chance of success. Then you throw in that your left fielder off the Green Monster is a guy who's played six professional games in the outfield in his life. Your right fielder is a DH that you don't think is good enough to play defense all that often, but you've been forced to use him because of Mookie Betts' injury. And oh, by the way, his designated hitter is the guy who should be playing catcher. I just didn't get it yesterday from Alex Cora's standpoint. Let's look at the lineup for today, though. The White Sox come in at 20-40. The Red Sox are 43-20. For the White Sox, the pitcher is Dylan Covey. He's 1-1 with a 2.82 ERA. Looks for back-to-back strong outings. It's his fifth start of the year. Chris Sale, his opposition, 5-3 with an even 3 ERA. He has struggled his last two times out. He's got losses against the Braves and Astros. He allowed six hits and four runs his last time out. Lineup behind Covey, Tim Anderson's at shortstop. Jose Rondon's at third. Jose Abreu's at first. Matt Davidson, the DH, 11 home runs. That leads the starting lineup. Kevin Smith, the little-used catcher, is hitting fifth for the Sox. Yoan Moncada hits sixth. Trace Thompson, brother of Clay Thompson, hits seventh and plays center. Daniel Palka's in right, and Charlie Tilson is in left. If you haven't heard a lot of those names, that's why the White Sox are 20-40. Chris Sale is the pitcher for the Sox. Andrew Benintendi's in left. Brock Holt's in right. Xander Bogaerts at short. Mitch Moreland at first. Eduardo Nunez at second. Rafael Devers at third. Jackie Bradley Jr. in center. Blake Swihart, the DH, and Sandy Leon is the catcher. We get a text in. Alex at Moncton says, did you happen to notice that the pitch calls were calling from the dugout? Alex, what I read, those pitch calls were coming from Swihart himself, and he said after the game, I got a little fastball happy with my calls. That will do it for us. Everybody have a great weekend. I hope Arnie ends up getting his wife something nice. She deserves it for putting up with him. Jess's birthday tomorrow. I got a whole slew of things planned. Hopefully she likes them as well. For intern Colton and intern Nick, for Rich and Arnie in the Huddle, I'm Brady. We'll see you Monday. It's 101.3 ESPN.
It's been a drama-filled offseason for the Patriots and a lot of fun if you're around.